Disclaimer. The things that you're about to hear are the thoughts of the host, Daniel Briggs Adisa. Also, every single writing used is the work of the host and producer of this podcast, Daniel Briggs Adisa. We recommend that you listen to this episode with your earpiece or earbuds, anyone you reach people like to use. And also, we hope that you enjoy this episode. But don't forget, listen to this with your earpiece. If not, you would not enjoy this episode. And with that said, yeah, enjoy. I had a dream, or maybe it was a day vision. There I stood in the crowd, a mob really. The answers to how or when I got there are beyond me. Well, there I stood alone, knowing I'm missing something. No, someone. I look up at the crowd. I look to see the crowd, to see within it. Looking, finding. My vision of the world was bleak. But in that bleakness, a glimpse of who I lost, a sense of color within the gray. It felt so familiar, it felt known. So I chased it. Frantically, I searched and searched again, thinking of the color, thinking of you. The shades of blue, the scent of red, the steps of purple, the aura of the sun. A visage of life, excitement, a corruption of black. I pushed through the bodies of grey, struggled among the unknown, looking for you again. I ran along the sidewalk, crossed the streets, sometimes reaching close, sometimes barely reaching. For a better view, I pushed higher than my standing, higher than the crowd. Going for a bird's eye view just to see you again. All along bearing the bits of pain, suffering the air of loneliness. What is this sense of loss? My heart beats frantically, searching for my precious. Have I lost the treasure? It seems like it. Why? I can't remember. If it was precious, why was it lost? And if it was lost, can I find it again? I climb higher, up to the top of a tower. I see the patterns in the crowd. They seem to plot a map. Where it leads to, I really am unsure. But I found a compass to guide me. I like Jack Sparrow's compass. I hope it leads me till I find it. Till I find my ex in the crowd again. But until then, I shall be alone. Occasionally friendly, occasionally loved. Till I find my ex in the crowd. The Ex in the Crowd by Daniel Briggs Adisa. Hello everybody, Daniel Briggs Adisa here, host of the Letter Times with Daniel podcast, and welcome to sort of a special episode on the podcast today. You know, it's mostly going to be kind of like a monologue thing, you know, so sit by the fire, enjoy the warmth, you know. Like I said in the disclaimer, it's best if you listen to this episode with your headphones. But getting into the episode, shall we? Let's talk about our exes. Now, no, I'm not here to bash our ex, you know, even though sometimes it can be really, really satisfying to do that. But I don't recommend it. The thing about our exes is, especially for those who, in the course of the relationship we had with them, we fully immersed ourselves emotionally, mentally, you know, purposefully, we fully immersed ourselves in their lives, it's kind of hard to get over the fact that you're no longer in a relationship with them. And sometimes that gets ingrained deeply. But here's another thing about exes. Most of our exes are practically the same. I don't mean they are the same persons, they are the same personality, but there are traits, there are some significant things, you might say, that attract you to them, that make you choose, quote unquote, their type. Because many of us, we have a type, whether we know it or not, we have a type. And psychoanalysts will tell you that we are constantly looking for the love that feels familiar. You know, they come from this whole aspect of how we experience love as a child, and you know, that boils into how we experience love or how we want to experience love as adults. You know, there are particular traits that we constantly look for, and in the video that I used as the major drive for the content for Romanticism 1 and 2, the video on Romanticism by Alain de Botton, he mentioned something that we are looking for the love that will make us suffer enough. You know, and it kind of fits in with the theory, the self theory I have, that we tend to choose, or we tend to have a decent level of toxic that we cannot live without. Like everybody, we all have our own deep ingrained and executed brand of toxicity that we need in our life. It's like addiction. We are addicted to it and we always want to snort that thing up through our noses. Point is, you will always be looking for your ex. Look at every single person. Why did I say person that way? Look at every single person you have dated up to this point. And maybe you're married now. So look at the person you married now and look at those other people that you've dated in the past. You'll notice similarities in maybe the way they view the world, in how they perceive certain actions, in how they do certain things. Maybe you perceive that they tend to annoy you the way the others tended to annoy you. Now, the annoyance thing is to varying degrees. Obviously, some people take it to the extremes, and then some people are moderate, you know. But usually the sense of annoyance you get from them is comfortable, it's familiar, and it's part of the things that we maybe consider unconscious. Maybe consciously or unconsciously consider when we are trying to choose a partner, when we are being attracted and cementing the attraction to a person. Let me try to give another example. For instance, let's say you meet somebody. On paper, this person is perfect. This person is, by all counts, someone you enjoy being with. On paper, that is. This person is your swipe right Tinder. This person is your, oh, I'm nearby Grindr. This person is your Hulu Badu. On paper, that is. So let's say you go out on a date and you do have a good time. You do have some form of a good time, but then when you get back from the date and let's say your friend asks you, how was the date? You'll be like, it was good, it was okay. And then they ask the question, are you going to see them again? You'll be like, probably not. And it's like, what's wrong? Did they do anything, any particular red flags, anything of those natures? And you might hear no. They just didn't vibe. That's mostly it. And, you know, Just because they seem perfect together on paper doesn't mean in practicalization. Is that the word to use? Whatever. In practicalization of the emotions that might come with things and the attraction that they are going to experience towards each other, they weren't perfect. There was something not familiar. There was something not comfortable, not interesting enough. And that doesn't speak about the character of the person in any way, but it just means this is somebody that you are not attracted to, right? And I do know that most of us, we have this sense of romance, you know, that we meet the perfect person. But most of the time, you will meet a lot of possible candidates, and some once in a while, you meet a very possible candidate and you give that very possible candidate a chance. Well, it depends on what you value in a relationship and what values in a relationship you seek. But hey, that's another thing. But the point I've been trying to make is, we will keep on looking for our exes. Old flames die hard. Old flames influence us. We carry over the scars. We carry over the warmth of the fire from the previous relationships. And we carry them in our expectations of the next relationship. So automatically we start looking for similarities in who we were with before and who we would like to be with again. We conflate the ideas of the two people together, creating the standards that we will use to judge incoming relationships or even past relationships. So we end up dating people that have similarities. We end up constantly dating the same person we dated the first time, or the same person we fell in love with the first time, because we'll keep looking for aspects of that person in every other person that we're going to end up with. So yeah, that was the rationale behind X in the crowd, you know, because you can see the entire world. You can get attracted to somebody else. That might be a distraction that might last a while, or a distraction that you would be immune to quickly because it just doesn't carry the essence of your previous relationship in it. You know, everybody has their own level of toxic that we require to feel good and feel happy about things. Now, I'm not saying toxic in the level of, oh, choke me daddy and slap somebody to their neck, turns 360. But you know, toxicity is quite subjective, especially toxic relationships, quite subjective. It's mostly a circumstantial or situational thing. So yeah, we usually just identify the extremes alone, but we don't admit that there's an in-between. And that in-between is quite gray. It's quite difficult to navigate, but today's episode is not about physical violence or toxicity and all that nonsense. But I want to ask some questions about wedding vows. What is it with wedding vows exactly? Like, how do you craft the perfect, should I be using the word perfect? How do you craft a really, really, really good wedding vow? What should go in it? Does anybody have an answer? And I'm very sure somebody in your mind right now, you're screaming, Google it. Google it. When it comes to this whole issue of wedding vows, you know, most of us, we tend to remember the, I think I heard somebody once call this the line of devastation, right? Oh God, where did I hear that? The line of devastation. Anyway, this is what I'm talking about, the part about in sickness and in health, in rich or whether rich or poor, you know, till death do us part. And nowadays, it seems many people have problems with death do us part on both sides, male and female. This is not a gender thing. So please, don't in your mind you start going, it's woman, or in your mind go, it's men. No. I assure you, it's both genders. And I think one of the reasons why many people have a problem with the till death do us part is because, first things first, marriage is a religious institution, and many of you might not like to hear that, but it is primarily a religious, you know, institution. And with that comes a context to the default traditional vows that most people getting married, especially Christians, like to take, the till death do us part. It's built on the context of what Christians are meant to see marriage as an internal union between Christ and the church, a representation of the eternal union between Christ and the church. That is what a Christian's marriage is supposed to reflect or demonstrate. You get what I mean? So when you take it out of that context, because now the context is, oh, it's a religious thing, it's meant to signify some sort of divine situationship. Ah, God forgive me for calling it a situationship, but divine situationship. You know, it's now no longer a thing of, oh, manpower. It's also a thing of cooperation with divinity, right? Cooperation with God in your marriage and things like that. Holding, making sure his values are forefront, etc., etc., etc. But when you take it out of that context, now it, and you take it into the context of the state and different things like that, till death do us part is quite problematic. You know, because for the Christians, we believe in eternal life, we believe we have eternal life, but outside of that belief, till death do us part seems like an eternal burden that nobody should have to bear. And yes, in a form, it's an eternal burden. Okay, not eternal burden, because when we die, we have rapture, etc., etc., no married couples in heaven, so if you don't like your wife currently, don't worry, when you get to heaven, automatic divorce. But jokes aside, today to us part is meant to be a cementing of commitment, right? But it's nowadays, it seems like the commitment of marriage is just saying that, you know, if you get married to somebody, you are obligated. That, using that word obligated, you know, you have the duty of satisfying that person and taking care of that person and fulfilling your role with that person. You know, the role of a wife to the husband, the role of the husband to the wife, etc. We romanticize marriage nowadays. It's kind of the way people romanticize having kids. You know, you hear somebody go, I want a baby, and I say something, people like that should be jailed. People who say, I want to have a baby. They are not saying, I want to be a parent. They see baby as something to possess, something cute, something to look and do. Come inside. Where did that come from? But anyway, you know, people like that should be jailed. But it's the same thing with, you know, marriage vows. Marriage vows are supposed to be a reflection of the commitment that you're making. But most people aren't even prepared for marriage when they make those marriage vows. So you hear so many romanticized things. You hear so many dramatic things that make absolutely no sense and seem unneeded. And 2 years down, you see them in the vows. And 2 years down the marriage, 3 years down, they're like, man, I did not sign up for this. It's no longer serving me.
if we have a culture of being very honest with ourselves about who we are, what kind of craziness we are going to be bringing into a relationship with the other person, if we had the culture of being very honest in the marriage vows that we make or we are going to make in the future, I think it would be a better way to tell the other person that, hey, Bubu, you need to prepare because you're going to be married to somebody who will most likely annoy you for a long ass time, and you're going to have to deal with it. You're obligated to deal with it. That's what you signed up for. Now, obviously, there are some things you should draw the line at, but most of the time, you're obligated. Most of the time, you're obligated. Is that how you say it? Yes. Obligated to serve, to satisfy, to humor, and to bear the frustrations of your partner. And by frustrations, I mean them frustrating you, because let's be honest, whosoever you're going to marry is going to make you want to kill somebody 5 out of 10 times. So, I just, you know, think about it. Imagine on my wedding day, I'm reading out my wedding vows, and in my wedding vows, I have things like, I will struggle to do the laundry, I will argue with you about who should change diapers, you know, I will want to watch anime on the screen and blaring it out on the stereo speakers, and I would like you to sit down there and just watch it without asking me questions, or at least trying to act like as if you're interested in them. And then some other days I watch the Kardashian with you, we'll book schedule, I'm definitely not going to be washing toilets, you're going to do all of that, don't worry, I'll help you to dry clothes. Like, if we had imagine if we had wedding vows that were like that, how fun would we weddings be? Because I don't know about you, many weddings, especially church ceremony part, is hella boring. But back to wedding vows. Wedding vows are meant to be an encapsulation of the love and the dedication you have to the other person that you are saying you are marrying. Is that right? That you are saying you are marrying? Oh God, I have suffered. But you get what I'm trying to say. So, who am I vexing for? So yeah, that is how I see wedding vows. Wedding vows can be romantic. I think after this series, some people are going to think I have something against romance. I'm a very romantic person. If you ask my friend Tobo and a couple of my other friends, I'm a very corny-ass romantic human being. I just like to form hard guy on the outside. I'm a very soft guy. I'm a very romantic fella. But, you know, even in my romance, I try to keep a level head about the expectations whosoever it is I'm going to end up with will have of me, the expectations I would have of them, and how to keep things realistic so that I can maximize the level of happiness I can possibly, attain in that relationship or through that relationship. So yeah, the major aim of this episode has just been to, or this particular segment of the episode has just been to talk about my desire for wedding vows to be less focused on the romance and lovey-doveyness of it, and create a balance in, you know, being truthful but at the same time being romantic. I think I have an example of what that sounds like. I'm not sure. I'll have to get feedback from you guys, because you guys are going to listen to it after I'm done talking, and you guys are going to tell me whether it's a good example of honesty and romance in the wedding vow. I mean, the wedding vow you're about to hear, if you were the one who hears it, would you feel loved and lovey-dovey on your wedding day? I mean, I just want to ask that question, Chike. So yeah, I guess that's all that's left for my monologue for this episode. It was fun creating this episode. This episode was really, really fun. I'm serious. It was really, really fun. The level of preparation that took into making and creating this audio experience, auditory experience, is mad. I know this is not really professional work like that, but I think I did well with this episode. Let me know what you think. This is a special episode. I'm not going to be doing things like this all the time. Guy, the amount of work that went into creating this thing was not beans. But yeah, and with that, I guess I'll be signing off. Don't forget to follow on social media. Don't forget to follow on Instagram. It's at Volatile with Daniel. That is the channel. Did I just, something is wrong with me. That is the page, the Instagram page for the podcast. If you want to give feedback and you don't want to go through Instagram and Facebook or whatever, there is a form down below in the description of this episode or the show notes. It's a Google form. You can give feedback, give recommendations, give topic ideas, collaboration, etc. All you have to do is just click and it will take you less than 1 minute. No, nobody's that fast. It will take you less than 2 to 3 minutes to put down all your ideas on the form. And yeah, I guess that's it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening so far. Let me know what you thought about this episode, about the composition of it all and everything. And yeah, I guess that's it. Daniel Briggs Adisa, signing off. Don't forget the little wedding vow I'm about to read to you. Dearly beloved, finally, we're here. To be honest, I'm happy, yet scared at the same time. Because I know I will never give you the best life you deserve. Life will not be easy with me. You already know that. I'm annoying, frustrating, dismissive, impatient at times, and cold at most. To be honest, I love you. I would like to promise you joy, greatness, happiness, and a life of growth. But I'm lazy and also pessimistic, so I won't. But here's one thing I'll promise. It will start and end with you always. I choose you now and I promise to keep it that way. I won't always make you happy. I won't always make you feel loved. If I'm honest, the truth is I promise to frustrate you. I promise to make you suffer a bit. I promise to make you want to hit me. Maybe even want to kill me a few times over. You report me to my mom, but I warn you, that won't do much. But despite all of that, if you still say yes, I'll do my best to make you an assassin only 2 out of 10 times. I won't always communicate well, so please bear with me. I won't always want what's best for us, so at those times, don't be fed up with me. I hate asking for help, but I'll ask for you. So if you dare to marry me, I can at least promise you forever, for as long as you have me, of course. Our forever won't always be happy, but it will be ours. I promise to be moderately and charmingly toxic. I only ask that you do the same. But for all it's worth, I do love you. I love you again when that love is lost. I found my treasure island, so even in barren days, I will defend it. If you say yes, you're trapped with me. But I promise I shall be a kind warden. So please say yes. Yes to this unromantic overthinker who promises to do the diapers once in a while. A Romantic Unromantic Wedding Vow by Danny Briggs Etzer.